Hi, this is Andrew Corbett, and here we are again looking at how to build a covenant community through this Bible study series based on Romans chapter 12, verses 9 to 21. This is study number 25. Beloved, never avenge yourselves, but leave it to the wrath of God, for it is written, "Vengeance is mine, I will repay," says the Lord. I once heard a Muslim convert to Christianity describe the biggest challenge he had in living now as a Christian. He said, "Vengeance." He went on to say the most dramatic challenge he faced now as a Christian was not to take vengeance on those who hurt or offended him. Quite possibly, this teaching of Christ about how to treat those who hurt us is the most distinct feature of Christian living. Question 1. In Matthew chapter 5 and verse 39, which says, "But I say to you, do not resist the one who is evil, but if anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to him the other also." As part of what we call the Beatitudes, Jesus gave one of the most challenging commands for anyone who would follow him. How would you put it in your own words, and why is it so challenging? So this is really a discussion, and it's a discussion that we're looking for people to really have a look at that text, because it doesn't just say don't hit back, as we'll see in a moment. It actually is taking it to a whole other level. Question 2. What Old Testament instruction does Proverbs chapter 20, verse 22, which says, "Do not say, I will repay evil. Wait for the Lord and he will deliver you." What Old Testament instruction does this give the worshipper? Well, again, it's really where Romans chapter 12, verse 19 is drawn from. It's don't take vengeance. Don't do it. Don't repay evil. Let the Lord deal with it and he will deliver you. And again, this is going to provoke some discussion. So let that discussion happen and keep guiding the study through these questions and these comments, because it may bring some clarity. Question 3. In what way did Christ give us an example of entrusting God according to 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 23, which says, "When he was reviled, he did not revile in return. When he suffered, he did not threaten, but continued entrusting himself to him who judges justly." So obviously talking about Christ, the Messiah, and really giving us the example. Here is someone who never did any wrong, but suffered a lot of wrong. That's the reviling. And so the question is, in what way did Christ give us an example of entrusting God according to this passage? Well, he gave us the ultimate example. He gave us an example in small things, and in the ultimate thing, he gave us the example. The fact that the New Testament gives this instruction to believers reveals just how tempting it was for believers to want to take things into their own hands. And I think that it's not just an issue for first century believers, is it? It's an issue still for us today when they were wronged, it says. I don't think this was a problem just for the first century believers either. It's a problem for us today. It's one of the rawest emotions that when we're hurt, we want to retaliate. How might many heated disputes be diffused before they even start if more people were to apply Romans 14 and verse 19? So this was looked at in the previous study. We looked at this verse, but it says this. So then let us pursue what makes for peace and for mutual upbuilding. So we have in this passage the injunction that we must pursue peace. We make that our priority. And not only that, for mutual upbuilding. And the context really is in the context of upbuilding the one who's aggravating us. This is a challenge, brothers and sisters. This really is a challenge. All right, over the page. Trusting in and waiting for God can be frustrating when we are being tormented. Now, when we're being tormented, attacked, or persecuted. History tells us that there are times when God judges swiftly, and we see an example of that in Acts 12, 23, starting at verse 21. It says this, "On an appointed day, Herod put on his royal robes, took his seat upon the throne, and delivered an oration to them," verse 22. "And the people were shouting, 'The voice of a God, and not of a man.'" By the way, at that time, that he had just cut off their food supply. So they were kind of groveling to him with flattery. Verse 23, "Immediately an angel of the Lord struck him because he did not give God the glory, and he was eaten by worms and breathed his last." And history actually records that this Herod actually did get a stomach complaint and died shortly afterwards. But then there are times when God patiently delays his judgment, and we see this all through Jeremiah. I've got an example there in chapter 35 and verse 15, where it says, "I've sent to you all my servants the prophets, sending them persistently, saying, 'Turn now every one of you from his evil way and amend your deeds, and do not go after other gods to serve them. And then you shall dwell in the land that I gave to you and your fathers, but you did not incline your ear or listen to me.'" So there's an example of God's incredible patience. Question 5. And hopefully, again, people can see the humor in some of these options. The reason God judges swiftly or delays his judgment is, select the most likely answer, A, God is often busy and doesn't see every act of injustice. Please help people to see that that's funny. B, God's timing of his judgment is designed to be the most redemptive for the greatest good. C, sometimes when God is having a particularly bad day, he tends to judge people very swiftly. That's meant to be funny as well. D, as God gets older, his memory continues to fade and he sometimes forgets to judge when he should until he is reminded about the injustice by someone praying about it. And again, that's meant to be funny as well. And it's meant to highlight that the answer, the most likely answer, is that God's judgment is designed to be the most redemptive, that is, for the greatest good. The next time we are wronged, hurt, betrayed, slandered, or maligned by someone, remember Romans chapter 12, verse 19, "Never avenge yourself, but trust God to deal justly with those who do unjustly, and may God help us to do so." Now, this study should provoke some really rubber hitting the road kind of discussion. And I think as group leader, you can, if you can manage the discussion by framing a lot of these questions in the third person, you will actually find some people offering answers and contributions in the first person. So what I mean by that in the third person sounds like this. Does anyone know anyone who has really suffered because they've been bitter and unforgiving towards someone else, and they even tried to hurt that person and it sort of didn't go well? Just throw a question like that out and see what happens. Do you know anyone who took matters into their own hands? There's another question. And what might happen is someone may say something like this, "Well, I don't actually know anyone else, but I know that I did that once, and this is what happened." And that's a very brave, humble, transparent contribution to the discussion that should be commended. And I would, at that point, if someone's just shared that, I might just let that sit, let that hang in the air just for a bit, because someone else in that moment might step up and say, "You know what, such and such hurt me, and I've had a horrible grudge against them," and who knows where this could go. But this is, as we've stated, one of the hallmarks of Christian living. It's really the distinct feature of Christian living, that how we treat those who mistreat us. Well, hopefully at the start of the night, you had your refreshments, you've moved into the room, you asked the two questions that we ask at the start of each study night. What are you thankful for? and what would you like prayer for? And this is the time when you remind people of what those prayer requests that everyone in the group requested, and invite people to take one of those and pray about that on behalf of our brothers and sisters in the group. And we are right now near the home stretch, and hopefully you're as the group leader, you're joining the dots for the group. So when the prayer points starting on your left come back around to you, you can, you know, again, pick up any of those prayer points that weren't picked up and pray that God will help the group to embody the very thing that you've looked at in the study this meeting. All right, God bless you, and we'll be back with study number 26. We're just about there.